And I took one sip and it was like, I don't know if you feel like, if you've ever had that feeling, like you've been struck by lightning. Like, I was like, what is this? I've never tasted anything so delicious. This is straight alcohol. And that mentor said to me something to the effect of, and this is a crazy thing for him to say. He's actually a very, like a very passionate wino, and he loves champagne. He loves wine. And he sort of whispered to me and he said, if more people knew about this, we could throw out all the champagne in the world. Mm-hmm. And I thought, and he was kidding and he was being hyperbolic, but I thought, what a strange thing for him to say. And the investor in me was like, why don't people know more about this? Why is this not more popular in the US?
This is The Story of a Brand, a podcast that helps people learn the story behind their favorite consumer products. I'm Ramon Vella, and I believe that people want to know more about the brands and products they purchase. So each week, I interview the founder of a consumer brand, unpack their story, their products, their mission, so you can decide which products are worth buying and which brands are worth supporting. Jennifer says, we've intentionally branded it in a really weird, unique, and magical way. If you explore our website and look at the bottle, it really stands out. We wanted to evoke a potion or a magical feeling, and the product itself is incredibly versatile. It's not only delicious on its own, you can pair it with pretty much anything: whiskey, tequila, gin, vodka, sparkling wine, and even some beers. And it makes these products taste better. And from my perspective, it elevates every kind of drink that it's put into. Whether it's a simple cocktail or just drinking it on ice or mixing it in a really complex cocktail. Today, we interview Jennifer Toyser, founder and CEO of Ume. Ume is a delightfully tart, mildly sweet plum spirit featuring a show-stopping royal purple hue. As a side note, you really have to visit the website and see what this looks like. It looks amazing and it's really, really unique. And it's made from all natural plums, grapes, and blackberries with hints of green apple and lemon. We discuss so many different things in this interview, from what she's grateful for to encouragement to other founders, an overview and origin of Ume, launching during COVID and all the issues they experienced, getting validation from the industry, a review of the product, including the ingredients, the history, working with mixologists and so forth, why Ume is like a magical potion and a perfect condiment to your bar, advice for founders and dreamers of building a business, and so much more. So join me, Ramon Vella, and Jennifer Toyser as we break down the inside story of Ume on The Story of a Brand. All right, guys, here's the deal. I have a gift for you from our primary sponsor, Zenline. They are giving away their online course, their e-commerce academy, email and SMS marketing. This course gives you a step-by-step playbook to driving more revenue and retention with email marketing and SMS. This is normally a $500 package, but for our listeners, it's entirely free when you get started with your 14-day free trial of Zenline. Now, when you do that, chat into their support team and let them know you're one of our listeners to get full access to hours of course content that will help you make email marketing your number one growth engine. Now, I'm a big fan of Zenline, of the platform, of the people over at Zenline, and what they're doing for e-commerce merchants like you. So head over to storybrandgift.com. That's three words, storybrandgift.com, to get the details and sign up for your free trial and gift. Hey, before you start this interview, I want to let you know that Jennifer and the team at Ume have given our listeners a promo code. You can use Story of a Potion 10, all together, no space in between. Story of a Potion 10. We'll also have this in our podcast description. And I really feel like you owe it to yourself to take a look at this website, take a look at the packaging of this bottle. It's amazing. It looks like a magical potion. So I think that's why they call this Story of a Potion 10. And I think you're really going to enjoy it. It tastes amazing. So I hope you enjoy the interview. Don't forget to use the promo code Story of a Potion 10 to try Ume. Take care. Hey everyone, this is Ramon Vella, and this is another episode of the Story of a Brand. Like always, we have an amazing guest and brand that we're going to feature on today's show. But before we do, I have a little shout out that I want to give to my sponsor, Sendlane. Now, Sendlane has supported me throughout 2022, and they're supporting me throughout 2023, and I just couldn't be more grateful. I would not be able to do this show if it wasn't for their support. So I would truly appreciate if you go and you visit them, see if there's something there for you, support those who support the show and what we do here, and they get our mission. They help me feature founders and connect founders with consumers using their own voice, their story, their mission, their values, and you know, we see great success with that. So I just truly appreciate doing that. And I truly appreciate anyone who supports me in doing that. I can go on and on about their technology and their platform. And it's an amazing platform. It's one of the best email and SMS programs out there. It's for beginners, intermediates, et cetera, and so forth. I can go on about their customer service. But again, they support me in a time when a lot of SaaS companies are pulling back. They've committed to supporting me throughout this entire year. So go visit them. I have a unique URL. You can go to Story Brand Gift. And there's actually a gift when you go to the website. There's a little something there for my listeners. So take a look, see if there's something there for you. And I would truly, truly appreciate it. Now, without further ado, let's get to the main event. I have with me Jennifer Toyser, who is founder and CEO of Ume. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ramon. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I appreciate your time and energy, and I know you're busy, so I appreciate it. And I appreciate you kind of giving us a little bit of your story and the background and everything about your brand to our listeners. Now, I love to start off my interviews with the question of gratefulness. And I do this again for two reasons. One is, if you're feeling stressed out, if you're feeling anxiety, if you're feeling, you know, a little bit like your emotions are going every which way because of all the news and the recession and inflation and the pandemic, and we've been hit back to back, gratefulness is a wonderful, wonderful practice. Whether you journal, whether you meditate, whether you do all sorts of other stuff, I'm sure just, you know, it helps you relieve stress. Now, it also allows us to get to know a little bit about our person that we're interviewing. And I always like to make sure that you, the listener, knows that there are people behind the brands that we feature. They're human. I mean, they care about what they're doing. They care about their product. They're not just some faceless corporation. So with that, Jennifer, if you don't mind, share a moment or a memory when someone did something for you that made you feel grateful because it meant that they believed in you or your vision or your potential.
Thanks, Ramon. I love that question to start off the conversation. And I'm really blessed. I have a lot to be grateful for, a ton of support and supporters in my life that have helped me get here. And it's not specifically one memory or instance, but at the foundation, I have always had the unwavering support and confidence of my parents and my family. And from a very young age, I had some pretty wild dreams. I was always rambunctious and curious and, you know, maybe a little bit proactive in how I behaved. And my parents just always supported me. They never pushed gender stereotypes on me. Even, you know, there was one instance, I guess I was in kindergarten or something, and the teachers called them in expressing concern that I wasn't interested in typical girl things. And so my parents asked them what I was interested in. And they said something like, oh, she likes science and reading and playing with boys and sports. And my parents responded something like, well, what's the problem? Mm-hmm. And it just was such a, you know, they just really protected me from, I think, a lot of those stereotypes and expectations. And it gave me the confidence and I'm sure we'll get into some of this, but throughout my career, starting with where I went to school at MIT, to really thrive in places that are historically male dominated. Before starting UME, I spent a decade, really the majority of my career, in finance, another very much male dominated industry. And it all just goes back to that foundation that they helped me build, and the confidence and support, and the fact that they never reminded me or made me think that I was less than because I looked different or was different in some way from the people who are typically in those spaces.
Wow. I love that. And it's hard to do because, you know, when a parent has to be really self-aware about this, because even unknowingly, we can put, you know, pass on these stereotypes and these beliefs, et cetera, even really without thinking, because it's just so natural when a child is born to say, even from the color schemes, right? If she's a girl, we're going to buy pink and we're going to buy all this other stuff. And if it's a boy, it's blue. I mean, just these really basic things, we don't even think about it anymore, but those continue to perpetuate, you know, this color's for men and this color's for females and all sorts of other stuff. So it's really difficult. And so I applaud your parents, you know, for actively wanting to kind of encourage you. I am curious though, you know, you were given, and I can see we're grateful, because when you think about this, this is such a wonderful gift that your parents have given you and encouraging that way. But unfortunately, not everyone is like that. I mean, there are people who have, you know, doubts, who have, you know, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, imposter syndrome, whatever it is. And they avoid working in male dominated industries or like finance or wherever. Is there any words of encouragement that you would give? I mean, when you're in there, you know, your first day at your Wall Street firm or wherever you were, I mean, I'm sure along the way you must have encountered, you know, some pushback and maybe you had to prove yourself. I don't know. I'm wondering, is there anything that you would give to someone who's in that situation who didn't have your background, but maybe you can offer some words of advice or encouragement?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know how blessed I am and how unique it is, the situation that I grew up in. But that's not to say that I did not have my own self-doubts and was constantly questioning my own abilities. And when it came to getting into MIT, I really didn't know if I could do it. When I got there, I was worried I couldn't make it. And for me, even beyond my parents, I think it's really important to build a support network. And for people who don't necessarily have that ingrown network with their families, it's connecting with teachers, with mentors, with coaches, and finding that support network that you can build yourself. And I've been able to build on a support network at every stage in my life and in my career. And it's done wonders. And without that network, and it goes well beyond my parents, I absolutely wouldn't have had the confidence to start UME. And I wouldn't have had the financial resources, the network to raise money. And so, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember the first day walking into the Wall Street firm. The first place I worked was a place called Barclays. It was right at the tail end of the financial crisis. I was actually really in the thick of it in 2009. And people were even questioning whether that industry was going to exist. And I just, you know, I just continue to remember how at every point I've had a period where it's felt challenging, where it's felt impossible, where I thought I couldn't do it. And it's going to be scary. I mean, the first time you do something, you're not supposed to know what you're doing. And I think for me, it's just been reminding myself that I've always been able to get through it, that you put your head down when you have challenges, to try not to feel alone, to go back to that network, ask for help. And for me too, like in these new situations at Wall Street, as intimidating of an environment as it can seem, as cutthroat as it can seem, when you're starting out there, people want you to succeed. They want you to thrive. And so notifying people when you don't know something or asking questions, that's always been how I've been able to thrive, is continuously asking questions, finding answers, and just building confidence and building a foundation of skills.
And have you ever thought about, I mean, maybe you do this now, but have you ever thought about mentoring or mentoring groups or talking to others about, you know, these experiences you've had?
I Absolutely. I love mentorship, and mentorship has been so impactful to me and my career. So when I was still at Goldman, which was where I spent the majority of my career, I had folks who were junior, who were peers, and we spent a lot of time together. In terms of doing it more formally or in a group format, I would absolutely be open to doing that. And I'm trying to build my network of fellow entrepreneurs, because it's definitely a unique experience to start a company. And one of the things that I found, and again, it was a challenge in the beginning, was the fear and realization that, wow, I really don't know anything about this. I don't really know what I'm doing. And we all experience that anxiety, that doubt, is this going to work? Are people going, can I do this? Am I the right person for this? And it just, again, it goes back to looking back at what you've been able to accomplish and the confidence that you can generate from that, and reaching out to the network and trying to find mentors and people who've done this before. So, you know, it used to be the folks in finance. Now it's more people in the entrepreneurial space. But yeah, it's short to answer your question. I love talking about this. I love passing along information and guidance, and also just the knowledge that, you know, it might seem like it's easy for me, or I might seem really confident, but there are definitely periods of time when I am white knuckling it. Like I wake up in the morning and it's like crushing anxiety. Like, can I really do this today? And so it's, you know, every day is different, and it's an absolute journey.
Yeah. So I'm curious about something. So there seems to be a pattern, right? When you early on, you mentioned about how your parents, that kindergarten example where you wanted to do things differently. And so then you went into MIT, and then you went into Wall Street, and there almost seems to be a pattern of challenging yourself and putting yourself in environments. Now, maybe you weren't even thinking about, oh, this is a male dominated place and I'm going to go in and I'm going to show them, you know, what for, or anything like that. Or maybe it was. I don't know if that ever played a part into it, but it just seems like you've entered into a lot of areas where, you know, like you said earlier, you know, they're male dominated. But I mean, is there something about a challenge? Is there something about wanting to push the boundaries? Is there something about pioneering that just excites you? Or maybe we're overthinking it. I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah. And I think maybe it's a little bit of naivete, but the fact that I was raised in sort of this genderless or gender neutral way, it actually never occurred to me until I got into these spaces like, oh, wow, I'm different. Or other people would try to remind me. Like, I remember when I got into MIT, there were so many people who would say things like, oh, why do you want to go there? It's such a hostile place to women. I mean, things that are actually fundamentally not true. And maybe they were at a certain point in time. But for me, it's been more just following my passions and interests. And those have just happened to align with challenging spaces and industries, as it were. And in the case of MIT, it was just an environment. And there were some other schools I was looking at. But when I went there, it was the first time I found a place where everyone was as curious and strange and passionate about learning as I was, or at least that's how I felt the first time I was on campus. It was this creative energy, this intelligent energy that I had really never experienced before. And for me, it really spoke to me. And so that's why I wanted to go there. And the rest of it, yeah, of course, there's the reality, and maybe I live in a different reality in my own mind about how the world works. And, you know, I know I have to work hard, and I know I have to do good by the people that I'm working for or the people I'm partnered with. And I figure the rest will come from that, even if maybe folks have a certain bias when they first meet me or they underestimate me. You can't tell this, but I'm only 5 feet tall. And so especially when I started in Wall Street, I would walk into meetings and it's a sea of 6 foot tall men in suits. And I'm in many cases, literally the only woman. And I'm certainly look like practically a child compared to the rest of the room.
That's funny. And, you know, so you have this new venture that you're working on, and this is also in a male dominated area, but it's also, I mean, entrepreneurial. So it in itself, it is a challenge, and it does feel like, I feel like there's something about your personality that loves challenges. I don't know. We'll psychoanalyze that some other time, but, but, you know, entrepreneurship is where you actively put yourself in front of a bunch of challenges, creating something that's from nothing, an entity, an organization, a product, et cetera. And so you're not only just building all of this, but you're facing a ton of challenges each and every day. Every day can be an up and a down, all in the same 24-hour period. And so you put yourself in this additional challenge. So before we can continue, why don't you give us just a quick overview of what we've been talking about? What is...
Sure. And so Ume is a plum liquor that I developed. I had the idea for it in mid-2020, peak COVID. I was actually in the process of leaving Goldman, which is where I'd worked for 8.5 years. I had a really amazing offer to accelerate my career at a different firm. And so I was in the process of transitioning to the new role. And I had with a mentor and friend of mine, a plum wine from Japan that was a revelation to me. And I was really historically not much of a drinker. And what we developed, and I can get more into the story of how it came to be, was a really unique product that to me was truly delicious. It's purple, which was intentional. So it's really beautiful. It makes gorgeous cocktails. We've intentionally branded it in a really weird and unique and magical way. And, you know, if you explore our website and look at the bottle, it really stands out. It's really, you know, we wanted to sort of evoke a potion or magical feeling. And the product itself is incredibly versatile. So it is not only delicious on its own, but it can be paired with pretty much anything. Whiskey, tequila, gin, vodka, sparkling wine, even some beers. Mm-hmm. And it makes all of these products taste better. And from my perspective, it elevates every kind of drink that it's put into, whether it's a simple cocktail or just drinking it on ice or mixing it in a really complex cocktail, which we have in many menus and many fabulous establishments now around the city. But that was the intention. It was to create a really unique product, something that is unlike anything on the market, something that was extremely versatile, could pair with a lot of things. And the idea came from the plum liqueurs that I had been familiar with and became more familiar with from around the world.
Well, and thank you for that. Well, it feels like you said it earlier about naivete when you're going into other arenas. Do you think you were naive going into this? I mean, everyone always tells me this, especially people who come from other industries. They always say, I didn't know it was going to be this hard, or I didn't know what I had to go through in order to make this happen. Did you have a similar experience?
Absolutely. And I think this is pretty consistent with how I've jumped into every endeavor. And so it hasn't, in some sense, it hasn't been so surprising. But on the one hand, absolutely, like I get very one-track minded. I really, my dad always says, I put the blinders on when I want to do something and I want to achieve something. It's like and a lot of people, of course, when I was getting into alcohol said, oh, that industry's so competitive, it's impossible to break into, you need a celebrity. And I was like, I have an idea that's going to change the industry and I'm going to figure out how to make it work. And then of course the reality, we created the product, we created the brand, and all of that was really fun and really interesting. Bringing it to market, of course, is another story. And then scaling the business is extremely challenging. I have been for sure surprised at how many things can go wrong. I'm talking about trying to launch a liquor company in the midst of COVID and some of the challenges that we had, for instance, when there was the Omicron wave and we were just really starting to pick up momentum in New York, and all of a sudden everything shut down again. And our sales that month just absolutely cratered, and it was heartbreaking. And we had this great product, we were getting such great reception, and all of a sudden it felt like we were back to square one. On the supply chain, there were periods of time where I could not get glass. And so I was spending days calling factories around the country and just every single day asking them, do you have a pallet? Can I get some product? Can I get some glass? And I was literally buying everything that came available to an extent that I actually think I overbought glass. But we were one of the very few small brands that had no supply issues because we were so aggressive, and because I was seeing what was going on in the world and just felt such great anxiety. But it wasn't without its challenges. I mean, one of our suppliers of our tops, when we were trying to launch in the spring of 2021, just kept pushing back our production run. They're based in Mexico. And so one day I emailed them and just said, hey, I'm going to be in Mexico City this week. And I popped down And lo and behold, that week they did the production run. So I just showed up. but it was scary because, you know, you have a budget, you have an amount of money that you've raised, and it costs a certain amount to bring something to market. And delays like that, months where sales are down, you know, if that those things persist, they can really kill a business. You're running out of product. It can be a business killer. And so those kinds of challenges have been very anxiety inducing, but at the same time, getting through them has, I think, made the company stronger, made me more confident that we can tackle whatever challenges are sure to come down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. And walk us through a little bit about when launching during COVID, did you try to launch retail? Were you going to be only D2C, and are you retail right now? Like, what were maybe the pandemic and COVID kind of forced you to choose which path, but what's your distribution right now? And what were you back in during the time of COVID if it was different?
Yeah. So at where we are today, so since that June 2021 launch, when we launched in New York City, we are now in New York, Florida, New Jersey. Most recently, we're going into Illinois and California. We're in over 550 accounts. About 75% of our customers are on-premise, meaning bars, restaurants, hotels, hospitality, like where you drink out of your home. And the other 25% are retail, so stores. And that said, we are about 50-50 now, retail sales to on-premise. And that's pretty natural to start to see that shift as the brand grows. Going back to when we launched, we were almost 100% focused in the on-premise channel. And that was a strategy that I had laid out and that we had committed to from when we started developing the product in 2020. And I have to say, we had investors walk away because that was our plan. We had people telling us the on-premise isn't going to come back. Everyone's divesting from it. And one of my other mentors, another entrepreneur, had always said to me, always rushes to where the puck is, like talking about a hockey game. But a real visionary, real entrepreneurs look at where the puck is going. And for me, having been in lockdown at that point for 6 months and everyone feeling stir crazy, I knew it would take us 6+ months to get into market. And I thought, there was talk that the vaccine was coming. I thought, unless something goes horribly wrong, everyone is going to want to go out again. Mm-hmm. And for us, we were creating a new product, something unlike anything on the market. I also felt very strongly that we needed the validation from the industry. We needed to get menu placements at top restaurants and bars to validate to us how the product could be used. And it's very hard to go to direct to consumer. It's especially when it comes to educating people on a new product. If you think about it, people generally know what a tequila is, what a vodka is. So you don't have to teach them how to use it in their home. And you don't have to explain to them what it is. A purple plum liquor, nobody's really ever seen it because it's never really existed before. And so we felt that if we got the validation from the industry, we would then very much more easily and efficiently be able to acquire the consumer. But again, going back to the fall of 2020, it was not clear when or what the timing would be. I was certain that the industry would come back. I felt like it was going to come back sooner than people thought, that people wanted to get back out. And so by the time we launched in June of 2021, even though there were still concerns around COVID, the industry was starting to bounce back. And I also thought that we might have an advantage because I knew the rest of the industry had pulled back from marketing to on-premise. They had let go of a lot of their sales reps. So I thought we would have access to a lot of talent, which we did. We hired some fantastic salespeople and my team is amazing. And many of those folks had been laid off during COVID because they were on-premise specialty. Mm-hmm. And we would never have been able to hire those folks had they been, you know, still at their jobs at Diageo. And so, you know, in every moment of challenge and doubt, you know, you just kind of look for ways to use it to your advantage. And that's what we did throughout COVID, was we found bright spots or things that we could do to accelerate our brand and to use what was happening to our advantage.
Well, you know, and that sounds easier said than done, because it makes sense now. And we're seeing in all sorts of different sectors, companies who went all in to, e-commerce, which is, of course, it's not going away either. But I think people really underestimated the return to physical stores and physical locations and people wanting to go out and so forth. Because, look at it now. A lot of the layoffs, unfortunately, in the tech world are happening because they just overhired during the last couple of years, thinking sure. like, hey, the world has changed. But it's easy to think about that now and say, oh, yeah, it makes sense. People were locked up for a couple of years. And so now they just want to get out and go out and do stuff. But, back then, people, everywhere you read was the world has changed. No one's going to go back to work. No one's going to do this or, so to have that belief was great on your part, but also scary, I'm sure, because you said investors walked away, which is, I guess I don't blame them because it's hard to go against the current and you did that. So that's admirable.
And I always thought like when you have a conviction and you go down a path, you also have to be adaptable. And so I always knew in my mind, if we got to March, we got to April, and it looked like the lockdowns would continue for another 6 months or 12 months, heaven forbid, we would have adjusted the strategy. But I had a thesis and I had really strong conviction that this was the best path for the brand and that the world was going to be where we needed it to be at the time that we launched. And, I call it luck, call it, whatever you want, but it worked out for us and it's fantastic. And it's actually been a really great strategy and I think helped us accelerate and grow as quickly as we have.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's admirable and it's hard to do, especially in the time. Now that you've been validated, I'm sure it's easier, but back then I'm sure people were kind of pushing back on you. Now, let's walk a little bit around or talk a little bit more around the drink, because
sure. It
is different. It is unique. I've never seen anything like it. I've seen other liqueurs and things like that might have different flavors, but very rarely. And they're usually kind of very sort of like, I don't know what you would call it, but almost like an accessory type of drinks. And yours seems to be something that not only can you have as part of a cocktail or a drink, but also just drink on its own. So it's kind of unique. Walk us through, maybe from a high level, walk us through like the flavor, like what are people experience? Sure. If you can, I know it's probably hard to describe it, but describe what it tastes like. And then let's start walking through a little bit about what the ingredients are and what it's made of, just to kind of give us a good idea.
Absolutely. So just starting from the product itself. So the liquid, it has 17% alcohol. So it's higher in alcohol and stronger than a wine. It is very lightly sweet. It has less than half the sugar of most of the liqueurs in its category. If you think of Chambord and Aperol and Saint Germain, they tend to be very sweet. And so that also helps make it drinkable. And it has a lot of natural acidity from the fruits in the product. And so the flavor profile is very lightly sweet. It's nice and bright and tart, but not heavy or cloying. It tastes like plums. There's notes of dark cherry and green apple and citrus. And that's because those are the core ingredients. We start with a base. It's made in the USA, currently in California. And it starts with a grain alcohol base, essentially a vodka, which is proof down, meaning the alcohol is reduced with a combination of fruit juice and all natural fruits and essentially water, which gets it down to that 17%. And the fruits that we use, it's actually a fairly simple product at the end of the day with the alcohol. And then there's plums, dark cherries, grapes, green apple, and some of that citric acid, which is essentially lemon juice.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what was it? It sounds incredible. It sounds, and it actually sounds different than what I was imagining in my head, because just thinking about plums and other liqueurs that I've had, sometimes they're like overly sweet and so forth. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that's not the case with Ume. What was it about when you first tried it or when you first had your first drink, what was it about it that just made you feel like, wow, there's something about this beverage?
We have so much value coming your way as soon as we get back from thanking our sponsors. All right, guys, here's the deal. I have a gift for you from our primary sponsor, Sendline. They are giving away their online course, their e-commerce academy, email and SMS marketing. This course gives you a step-by-step playbook to driving more revenue and retention with email marketing and SMS. This is normally a $500 package, but for our listeners, it's entirely free when you get started with your 14-day free trial of Sendline. Now, when you do that, chat into their support team and let them know you're one of our listeners to get full access to hours of course content that will help you make email marketing your number one growth engine. Now, I'm a big fan of Sendline, of the platform, of the people over at Sendline, and what they're doing for e-commerce merchants like you. So head over to storybrandgift.com. That's three words, storybrandgift.com, to get the details and sign up for your free trial and gift.
So I had historically not really been much of a drinker. Primarily, I don't like the taste of most alcohols. And I'd really just not found a drink that I felt connected to that I really enjoyed more than one of. And I'm with my mentor on this you know, fateful night back in August of 2020. And we were eating sushi. And for dessert, he served this Japanese plum wine. And I took one sip and it was like, I don't know if you feel like if you've ever had that feeling like you've been struck by lightning. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, what is this? I've never tasted anything so delicious. This is straight alcohol. And that mentor said to me something to the effect of, and this is a crazy thing for him to say. He's actually a very passionate wino, and he loves champagne. He loves wine. And he sort of whispered to me and he said, if more people knew about this, we could throw out all the champagne in the world. Mm-hmm. And I thought, and he was kidding and he was being hyperbolic, but I thought, what a strange thing for him to say. And the investor in me was like, why don't people know more about this? Why is this not more popular in the US? And as I mentioned, I was in that transition period between jobs, and I was forced to take 2 months off. And so this was me starting my vacation in lockdown in the peak of COVID. And I started to research this product, and my family is actually also Eastern European. And so I grew up with my grandparents drinking, it's called, the region they're from, it's called Slivovitz, which is essentially a plum brandy. It doesn't taste anything like the Japanese version. It's very different. But what struck me was there's something about plum and alcohol that makes a lot of sense. It's used in so many parts of the world. It's very popular. And I started doing research on the history of plum alcohols while I was on this break. And it's very ancient. It's an ancient tradition in many cultures, and it's extremely versatile. And versatility, again, like another check in that sort of investor mind bucket. It's like, oh, it can be used for a lot of things. And I started to reach out to bartenders and folks that I had met in the hospitality and industry on Instagram, and just asking them, do you know about this product? What do you think of plum alcohols? Why aren't they more popular in the US? Is this something you would use? And the responses I was getting were so overwhelmingly positive. I started getting really excited. And here I am staring down the next 2 months of basically nothing to do because I'm not allowed to work and I can't travel because it's COVID. And my husband's working and my friends are working. And so I was going stir crazy. And I thought to myself, why would I let this 2 months go to waste? Why don't I try to start this plum wine company? And it essentially started as kind of a joke, like something to do. And I bought the domain drinkplum.com. I got connected serendipitously. That same mentor that introduced me to the plum wine had just invested in a fantastic alcohol producer based in San Francisco, a company that uses really cutting edge technology, sustainable technology to produce wines and sakes and other spirits. And I asked him and I said, could you introduce me to them? I just want to see if it's possible for them to create something like this. And I had taken notes from the mixologist who had responded so positively, and they had actually given me feedback as well. Like, oh, this is how I would use it, but maybe this is how I would change it. I think it should be stronger in alcohol. I think it should be lower in sugar. And so I had sort of a spec sheet that I was building about the product I wanted and how I wanted it to be used. I wanted it to be light enough and low enough in alcohol that you could drink it on its own, but I also wanted it to be strong enough and prominent enough in flavor that you could mix it. And so I contacted this producer, I got in touch with this producer, and it just so happened that their head of R&D was very familiar with plum alcohols. It was something that was also very familiar to his family, and it was something that was he was very nostalgic about. And he, like me, started to see the opportunity and think, why doesn't this exist in the US? Why is this not more popular here? And the CEO of that company and the head of R&D came back to me about a day after our first conversation. And they said, we're really excited about this, and we would like to explore this with you, and we'll do the R&D work for free. And so that was very compelling to me. And so I scheduled time. I flew out there to San Francisco to see them. And that was the beginning of Ume. I wound up calling up the firm I was supposed to go to and saying to them, look, I started an alcohol company. I'm very sorry. I'm not going to be able to come work with you. They were surprisingly supportive and started to look to raise money and build a business plan for what we needed to get this into the market.
Wow. I love that story. And yeah, I mean, it actually sounds, I mean, I know you, it sounds easy, but I know it probably took a lot of iterations. One thing you said about you wanted it to be light enough to drink on its own, but also strong enough so that you can mix with other drinks. I mean, it sounds amazing that what you're describing, but at the same time, I know that's not easy because it's right. You to create something that's light with 17% alcohol, but also strong enough to mix with other drinks. That's a hard order. I mean, how many iterations did you guys create? I mean, how long did it take to develop it?
Yeah, it only took, and this is a testament to that producer and their technology and their skill set. And one of the things that I liked about them was these are people that were really food scientists. They were nerds, and they had PhDs in food from McGill. And so, you know, the MIT person, you know, part of me was like, these are folks that could really execute what I'm looking for because they have such a strong knowledge of flavor profiles and sugar and how things balance in food between sugar and acid. And so it wound up being about 5 iterations. Within those iterations, there were usually 2 or 3 alternatives where we would test like differences in sugar content. We would test different types of acids. We were playing around with the color. And this was another, you know, something else that we took advantage of during COVID. Every time we would get another iteration from them, I would have people from the industry that I would reach out to, some of the top sommeliers and mixologists and food folks who themselves had some extra time because many of them weren't working or were working reduced hours. And I would say, look, I'm having folks over for dinner. I would love to get your feedback on this product I'm creating. And they would give us very detailed notes. And these were folks who had been working with drinks for many years. It was their career. They knew alcohol, they knew mixology, and right down to the types of acid they wanted us to use, to balances of the fruits within the product, to the sugar content itself. We would go back to the producer and they would do it. and so what we wound up with was a product that was made with a lot of intention, a lot of love, from people with a lot of knowledge, from the end users essentially, who knew what it would take to make a drink that people would enjoy on its own, but that they could also use at a bar. And a lot of alcohol, if you think about that, sort of the history of alcohol and liqueurs and aged whiskeys and wines, a lot of it is like putting it into a barrel and letting age do its magic. And then what you get at the end is sort of what you have. Mm-hmm. And for us, we were doing tweaks and adjustments all along the way. And it wound up allowing us to create a product that was very specific and very precise.
Mm, wow. I love to hear that behind the scenes stories, because I think it's so, I mean, we as consumers kind of see the end product, but I love to kind of hear a little bit about the background and the blood, sweat, and tears that you go over in terms of creating a product. Yeah. I mean, as you're speaking, I'm just thinking like, wow, I love everything about what you're saying, and you fit right into our tagline, which is products for my brands were supporting. And for everyone out there, and by the way, I'm going to mention the website, but my next question is Ume. Where did that name come from? And before I do, let me let people know, if you want to take a look at what we're talking about, you can go to drinkume.com. That's the word drink, and then the word Ume, that's UME.com, drinkume.com. And she has the most amazing splash page, I guess you'd call it, the top of the fold, and as they say in the web design world, it is, there's like smoke, it's purple, it's this wonderful, beautiful color purple, and there's like smoke or some sort of mist all around, and it's moving, and as you scroll down, you get to see this amazing, you know, drink. The bottle itself, and I'd love for you to walk me through the bottle a little bit, but the drink, as I'm looking at this, it looks like something out of a, like some sort of sci-fi movie, because it looks light. I see there's obviously ice in it, but it has this amazing color to it. I mean, it feels like just the drinking of it could be quite an experience.
And that is, the experience is the word that we were thinking this whole time. And I mentioned that the product, the liquid itself, was made with a lot of intentionality. Every element of the packaging, the branding, the design was done with intention and with the, you know, the values and the feelings that we wanted to evoke in this product. And, you know, going back to that time in 2020, where it was really tough, a lot of people were really isolated. For me personally, I get a lot of energy from my friends and my network and my family. And it's all about experiences and experiencing togetherness. And so when you ask about the name, Ume, the word is, it means plum in Japanese. And it's a nod to some of the Japanese inspiration in the product. But UME is also you and me. And for me, I thought that was a really fun play on the word. And you can see it in the logo. We separate out. It's a you and me. And that feeling of togetherness and that joyfulness and that, you know, the joy from sharing experiences and community that we wanted the product to represent and to be, you know, in itself an experience. So every part of experiencing the product, from when you purchase it and have the bottle and it's sitting on your bar, and it's sort of like its own, you know, piece of jewelry in a sense. And so references, when we were creating the packaging, we were looking at old perfume bottles. We felt like, because we were so meticulous about how we were creating the project, we felt like we were making a potion, and it was a magic potion. And so that was the inspiration behind some of the magical imagery in the on the website and in the branding. We had a little bit of fun in the logo and in some of the packaging and branding work. You'll often see like snake motifs, and we were having fun with this concept of the forbidden fruit and, you know, the story of original sin. And maybe it was actually, maybe the fruit that's referenced there was actually alcohol. It could have been a plum. And so we sort of wanted to turn that story on its head and make it more of a joyful story, with humans discovering pleasure and discovering fun and experiences. And so there's a lot of intention. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of feeling, a lot of joy and passion that went into the designing of the product, the designing of the packaging and everything that we've built around it.
Mm. And so walk us a little bit around a really unique top to it.
The top has been, you know, if we talk about challenges, there's a reason why a lot of bottles in the alcohol industry look the same. And the top, again, that potion bottle, the perfume bottles, we wanted something that really stands out. And I don't know exactly how we landed on this top, but the cylindrical spherical top, It just worked with what we were doing. And, you know, in spite of all the challenges it's created and continues to create, I think we're trying to keep this original shape, or as true to it as we can, as we sort of iterate and perfect the packaging.
Well, I mean, you use the word potion, and quite frankly, that bottle, it looks like something you'd see at some like apothecary or something, you know, like some potion that you would see on the shelf. I mean, it looks beautiful. I mean, the color, of course, but I love the imagery that you have on there. As you mentioned, you know, the Garden of Eden, and you have this beautiful, I mean, the label itself looks like it's sort of almost like, what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of drawn. And then this really interesting top to it. And then of course the little label that says drink me, it just looks, it looks amazing. And so quite frankly, it's very enticing. So walk us through. So if someone is really interested in what we've been talking about and how you describe it. And by the way, you have such great descriptions on the website in terms of what it is and so forth. How do you want us to experience it? I mean, I know we talked about drinking it straight and it's light and it looks beautiful, but what are the most common ways that people are using this? I'm sure that you're hearing new and different ways each and every day. I'm sure people are experimenting, but what do you suggest for someone out there listening? What do you suggest there? How do they start off with this?
Absolutely. And so I always tell people to start, pour it, just a splash of it with a little bit of ice, just to get a sense for the flavor. And it's really delicious. It's really bright. And some people honestly just stop there and then they just drink it straight with ice. And like I said, it's a strong wine. It's sort of a cocktail in itself. And so that works. For me, I like a lower alcohol drink. I like something like even lighter than that. And so the way I drink it is I put 2 ounces of ume in a glass and I top it with soda, just plain seltzer water. And if I have it on hand, I squeeze a lime or a lemon in it. And to me, that is the perfect drink. I can enjoy that all night. It doesn't mess me up. It doesn't give me a hangover. And it's so refreshing. It's so delightful. We joke about it being a potion, that it gives you this really magical buzz instead of, I think that's one of the terms my friend said, is a send you home stupor. Mm-hmm. And so that was, again, it was like that magical feeling that we want to evoke. And I'm of course biased, but that's how I always recommend people start with it. And then if there's a drink that you really enjoy, say you're a martini person and you love margaritas, then you can have some fun. Then you can start to experiment with it. It makes a really beautiful martini with either vodka or gin. I just do a split base. So I just do really one and one. For people who are used to stronger martinis, one part ume, 2 parts vodka or gin, and that's it. You shake it up over ice and strain it into a glass and you've got a delicious martini. In margaritas, you essentially replace the secondary spirit, so the triple sec or the Cointreau, and you pair it with tequila and lime, and you can add a little sugar. You have a great drink. And, you know, another simple nightclub drink, if you think about like the vodka soda or the tequila soda that's really popular when people are out, I like to add a splash of ume to that. I think it cuts some of the prominence of the tequila or the vodka. And all of a sudden, you know, with just 3 ingredients, you have a really balanced cocktail.
Wow. And I'm looking at these pictures, everyone. And again, you can go to drinkume.com, drinkume.com. And ume is U-M-E. You have there pretty much everything you just described. You've got a midnight spritz. You've got the ume rita, sort of, I guess, a play on the margarita. You've got the ume plume and one, and then you've got the teeny. And these all look, I mean, I know you got to make them look good for the picture, but they just look really great. And I love the color schemes to all of them. And one thing I noticed is that in each one of these drinks, and this is a testament, I guess, to the beverage itself, is that you have it paired with straw. I see strawberry in one drink. I see like an orange in another drink. I see, I think, a lemon on one other drink. And then there's something else, cucumber or something else on another. It really, I mean, it looks like it's just, I mean, if it, you know, you're pairing it with these different flavors from these different fruits. I mean, it must just be this like really base, amazing base sort of liquor that pairs with anything. I know we've been talking about it, but it's just, you know, visually seeing it, it's another thing. It's pretty cool. So I recommend everyone listening, go check out Drink Ume just to see what this looks like. But this is fantastic. I love this.
Thank you. And I think, you know, one of the things, and this is something I think it's sort of hard to grasp, but for me and why I'm so excited about what our opportunity is and what we have. If you think about like Heinz ketchup, right? And what that sort of has done in the food industry, it's a condiment, makes it kind of like everything taste better. Ume, it's a little bit more of a, it's a premium product. It's a spirit, but it's like a condiment for your bar. You can really use it in any situation. You can use it if you're just at home wanting to make something quick and easy. If you're looking to impress your guests, you're having a New Year's party, you can pour it in champagne and all of a sudden you have these magical purple champagne cocktails. Mm-hmm. You can, if you're out at a bar and you just want something simple, you pour a splash in with your tequila soda, you still have a very light, but also now a purple and tastier drink. And so it is something, it's really exciting and it's really unlike anything else out there. We can't think of anything that's this versatile that's on the market. And, certainly not something that can be mixed in so many different ways like Ume can, but that can truly also be enjoyed on its own or just with a splash of soda.
Yeah. Well, it looks very enticing as either way. So what's next for the brand? So is it opening more accounts? Is it rebranding? Is it new options in terms of additional liquors or versions of this?
Sure. So right now we're just focused on scaling. I mentioned that we're starting to move in some new markets. The liquor industry is, for regulatory reasons, it has very specific requirements around distribution. And so to go into new states, we have to enter into distribution partnerships, which we are in conversations with multiple distributors across multiple states. And the U.S. is an interesting place to start a liquor company because each state has its own rules and regulations. And so people in the industry sort of joke, it's like you're going into 50 different countries. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to be very strategic and systematic about opening new markets. We don't want to spread ourselves too thin too quickly. So this next year, we'll really be focused on continuing to build out the sales team, build out our marketing team. We've done a really great job at establishing the brand and brand awareness in the hospitality industry and community. And now we really need to scale the brand awareness, which is, I really appreciate you having me on. And so we can reach more consumers. We've really scaled up our digital marketing, our social media presence, and just continuing to succeed and execute at that. In terms of new products, there's nothing really in the pipeline. We've definitely toyed with some ideas. People are always asking me what's next, but I'm pretty focused right now on scaling this, making sure that this works and this product itself can grow to a sustainable place. And then we can figure out expanding from there. We'll continue to work on new packaging and things like gift boxes, potentially different size bottles. And so I think one of the concepts we were joking with was a purse potion. So something that was kind of like travel size, you could take it to a picnic or, take it out with you when you go. And so those are the kinds of things that we would look to explore first.
Wow. Well, this is amazing. And before I let you go, I know how difficult it is. You talked about, basically starting a brand like yours in the United States is like entering into 50 different countries and so forth, because everyone is different and everyone has different regulations and rules. We started off this conversation talking about naivete and not knowing what you're getting into. Now that you've been in it and now that you've created this and are launching this and focusing on scaling, any advice for other entrepreneurs who want to get into, the adult beverage market? Is there anything that you would recommend, any lesson that you learned and that you would recommend people avoiding? Because this is a tough market. I mean, let's face it, it's a very difficult, competitive market, not just the regulations, but just there's so much out there. So anything that you would suggest?
Yeah, I think, you nailed it. It's a really, really difficult market to enter into. You have major players that are so established, so dominant. Some of these brands have been around for literally hundreds of years. And so I think that the key for us to our success was entering the industry with something truly unique and special. And something that, what for us, one of the advantages we have is that we don't directly compete with anything, that we really play well with others, that we can be paired with things. So when we go to a bar and we go to a restaurant and we pitch Ume, they don't have to take anything off their program or remove anything from their program. It's just the question of whether they like the product and whether they think it fits in their program. And so that's a much easier sell than trying to convince them to add another, they get pitched hundreds of versions of each base spirit all the time. And so that would be my biggest recommendation, is to make sure that you have something that differentiates you, that you have a clear strategy and a reason why the strategy will work. So for instance, some brands launch focused on consumers. And so if you have a product that's really consumer friendly, has the right packaging and branding for a consumer, make sure that everything is built around that go-to-market strategy. For us, we built a product we thought we could really win on premise. And then we felt that because of the versatility, because of the simplicity of using the product, because of the beautiful packaging, we would ultimately win the consumer. But we were very intentional and we were very aware going in what our value proposition is. And so if you can't articulate your value proposition before you start or build the product, it's really tough. You're going to be faced with an extraordinary uphill battle. And so finding a way to stand out, making sure that the product really has that fundamental value, because I'm telling you, getting the attention of people in this industry is really difficult. And even Ume, as fabulous and fantastic and interesting as it is, we are constantly having to fight and prove our value. Mm-hmm. So I can only imagine how much harder it would be if it was, you know, if the product had sort of less differentiated features.
Yeah. Well, those are all great advice. And really, this is very difficult. So what you've created is such a, you know, it's just amazing. And it's a wonderful, I mean, just looking at it from a visual perspective, it looks great. So, all right. Well, this has been fantastic. So thank you so much. I want to be respectful of your time. Let's make sure people know how to get a hold of it, where to go. Is it available? I think I saw something about being available in various states. Tell us where it's available and how people can and order it if it's not local.
Absolutely. So we have a shop site through an online retailer that ships to 45 states. And so you can, through our website, that drinkume.com, there's a link to the shopping site where you can have Ume delivered. It's free shipping with the purchase of two or more items. So either purchasing Ume and a gift box or more than one bottle of Ume, and you get free shipping. We'll also have a special order code that we'll post at the end of the podcast. And what was I going to say? Oh, in terms of location. So I mentioned we're in New York, New Jersey, Florida. You can find us in stores, Total Wine and Mother's Market in California and Binney's Beverage Depot in Illinois. And you can see all of our locations on our website. There's a link to locations. It's drinkume.com/locations.
And how about any social media sites? Is there anyone that you want us to go to?
Absolutely. We're predominantly on Instagram and Facebook, and it's just Drink Ume. So it's just the website without the .com.
Great. And any events or anything where people can catch you? Because I know that, you know, nowadays people are doing more activations and more festivals and more events and so forth. Anything that is coming down the pike?
We don't have any major events coming up that we're going to be partaking in. We always do a lot of special events for Pride and coming up into summer. I will definitely be doing some things for Miami Music Week. I would definitely just recommend, if you follow us on Instagram, we always post about upcoming events.
That's great. Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing a little bit about your story and about your journey, about yourself and your journey in, you know, Wall Street and going to MIT and other places. This is very unique, and I highly recommend everyone going out there and taking a look at the website. You have to just look at the drink. I mean, it's a beautiful color, beautiful packaging, and it looks so tantalizing and delicious. So I definitely recommend people checking it out. So thank you so much. I appreciate you coming in and sharing a little bit about the brand and about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me on, and I'm excited to hear this podcast.
Well, everyone out there, we have just had Jennifer Toyser, who is founder and CEO of Ume. We just gave out the website and the Instagram, and we're going to have all of that on our podcast description, which you can find at Apple, Spotify, Google, pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts, you should be able to find it. Just type in the story of a brand show. And again, I encourage you to go sign up, find out where they are, keep up to date on all the different things. But again, go to the website, if only that, just to take a look at what we've been talking about, because it is quite unique, quite amazing, and it looks amazingly delicious. So check that out. Beyond that, everyone, stay safe, stay sane, stay healthy. And one last thing, we've all been going through a lot during the pandemic. Now there's talk of recession and inflation and Ukraine war and everything else. Let's just do ourselves a favor and be good to each other. Let's remember that everyone is going through something, whether it's tragic or stress or uncertainty or a layoff or whatever it is. Let's just be good to each other. Let's have a share a drink of ume and let's just all be kind to each other and remember that we're all going through something. Beyond that, everyone, thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to another episode of The Story of a Brand. This episode is produced by VA Flex Remote Podcast Production Agency. If you're looking for a top full-service podcast production company from editing to marketing to producing your own podcast episodes, go to vaflex.com or email studio@vaflex.com. Their services are plug and play. I literally only record and VAflex does the rest. Take your podcast to the next level and visit vaflex.com. That's VAFLIX.com. And as always, support those who support the show. All right, guys, here's the deal. I have a gift for you from our primary sponsor, Sendline. They are giving away their online course, their e-commerce academy, email and SMS marketing. This course gives you a step-by-step playbook to driving more revenue and retention with email marketing and SMS. This is normally a $500 package, but for our listeners, it's entirely free when you get started with your 14-day free trial of Sendline. Now, when you do that, chat into their support team and let them know you're one of our listeners to get full access to hours of course content that will help you make email marketing your number one growth engine. Now, I'm a big fan of Sendline, of the platform, of the people over at Sendline, and what they're doing for e-commerce merchants like you. So head over to storybrandgift.com. That's three words, storybrandgift.com, to get the details and sign up for your free trial and gift.